Some people can sit and read all day and be brahminical and really enjoy that, and they might even read some other books of philosophy and be able to apply it very nicely. Whereas someone else, you know, it's a very big effort to sit and read for an hour and wouldn't want to hear about any other philosophy, but might want to learn something about how to produce videotape or audio tape, and that would be a form of Yukta Vairagya, to read how that body of knowledge could be Krishnaized so that that person could make those tapes. And the other person might, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he read so much philosophy that was like existentialists like Descartes, and read about Christian philosophy, and he spiritualized it. He was able to write very profuse, he wrote many, many books, dozens and dozens of books in his lifetime, and he used his study of various other philosophies of the world in presenting Vedic philosophy in a way that people could assimilate it. But he was a great scholar, and maybe someone else who's not such a great scholar. And everyone, according to Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarna Maya Shishtaya, is born with different types of propensities, different gunas, different qualities, and different activities that are natural to that person. So, what's, of course, poison to one person is nectar to another. What is honey to one person is death to another. Everybody is different. And the way in which we use the knowledge of this world is that each person uses a different aspect of it a little differently, because we're all different. Someone may study construction in order to build a temple. Someone else may study the art of sewing, or there's many books written about that, so they can learn how to nicely dress the deities. So another person might look at cookbooks that are Hare Krishna cookbooks, just to learn the art. And this is practiced sometimes so that we can engage in the service of Krishna. So Prabhupada's teaching was that this was possible. Before Prabhupada, most sadhus were living the kind of life we were reading about. They were very giving up everything and living a very simple life. And Prabhupada came to teach us that, he said, if you're a businessman, do business for Krishna. If you're a singer, sing for Krishna. If you're good at doing some art, then paint for Krishna. If you sculpt, then sculpt for Krishna. So depending on what we're good at doing or what we like to do, and we may not know, we may have to ask, we may take many years to find out, but each person was given a different kind of, according to their nature, a different kind of activity to do. One person was doing this, another person was doing that, according to their propensity. So according to our abilities and our propensities, we act and we engage material energy in the service of Krishna. Of course, it is described in the Bhagavad Gita that there are different types of work. There's work that is capricious, there's laziness, and there is prescribed work. And of those three, we are into prescribed work. That is the work that's in devotional service. We're not into, and we shouldn't be into, just lazing around not doing anything. We shouldn't be into gratifying our senses. That's generating bad karma, vikarma. But we should be able to execute prescribed duties. And among the prescribed duties that we are executing, according to what Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, there is routine work, there's desired work, and there's emergency work. And sometimes we have to do all of them. And there's always kind of some emergencies that have to be seen to. There's routine work that always has to be seen to. We have to maintain ourselves, our temple. And then there's desired work, which is more along the line of what our natural propensities are. So those, all three things are there. And in all of those, we engage the service that's so-called material in the service of the Lord, then it becomes spiritualized. And Prabhupada compares it to putting an iron into a fire. It's an iron, it's made out of material elements, ferrous or whatever iron is. It's put in fire, and then when it becomes red hot, it has the qualities of fire, it acts like fire. So unless we can purify material energy like that, it isn't really Yukta Vairagya. And then the pitfall is that one can think, well, I'm a musician, so I'll sing rock songs for Krishna, and then he gets involved in the rock music scene and then develops bad habits. So it's kind of a razor's edge in a sense, that Yukta Vairagya, engaging the material energy in the spirit, in the service of Krishna, devotional service, one can be swallowed up by material energy and Maya. But the process is to harness these material energy and to engage it in Krishna service. And how do we avoid the pitfall? We consult. We consult with Shiksha Guru, we consult with Diksha Guru, we consult the Shastras. And we're very careful to know that we're engaged in prescribed duty, and duty that is what Krishna wants us to do, not what we think we might want to do because we like it. So, our austerity is kind of like the austerity of Arjuna. It would be an austerity to renounce the kingdom, to go live in a cave like he wanted to do and give up the fight. But a greater austerity was to do what he really didn't want to do. And to not do what we want to do is also an austerity. But those are not felt to be difficult or austere if we're doing them under direction, if we're careful to act under the direction of Krishna and his representatives. So, yeah, it's kind of a two-edged thing, it's Yukta Vairagya. There's preaching is, that Prabhupada says, not only a thankless task, but we also know that it's very dangerous, because we have to mix with the material energy. So for us to read regularly and chant regularly and dissociate and eat only for prasadam and try to spread Krishna consciousness is very, very important. Otherwise we can very easily get swallowed up in the material energy. Someone was asking Prabhupada in Los Angeles in 1968 about Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, how they seem to have fall down sometimes. So Prabhupada said we have to learn. The lesson is that material energy is very, very powerful. We shouldn't succumb to it. Anyway, that's just some thoughts on it. Maybe you want to add some thoughts, some more.
Thanks. It's a very big subject.
Very big. Very big subject. Sashi.
With regard to Yukta Vairagya again, like you said, in the process of trying to use energy in Krishna service, sometimes we get enamored by the process itself and get caught up in it. There are two things. One is about sometimes we feel in our heart, we can feel that what we're doing is not exactly right. You know, sometimes the intelligence or Chaitanya Guru within us tells us that it's not exactly Yukta Vairagya that we're performing this time. But when we go and try to take instructions with Sadhu, Guru and Shastra, I mean, Shastra of course may corroborate what we feel, but Sadhu and Guru may not. In such situations, how much weightage should be given to what your conscience is saying and what the Shastra is saying? Shastra in this context, within his column, I mean Prabhupada's books.
Yeah. But even Prabhupada's books, as explicit as they are with their purports, are not the be-all and end-all, because Prabhupada, of course, he has absolute shiksha, but it is a three-part check and balance system of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. And even though Prabhupada is shiksha and he is personally there, he is not sitting here talking to him. We can't sort of interact with him, and we often don't get the experience that we can get by talking with other devotees who are our peers or even our juniors. We can learn from them immensely because they're, you know, up to date with what we're doing. This is, you know, 1999, and this is our situation. So according to Deshakala and Patra, they're acting. So we have to be very careful that we don't become too one-sided and just say, well, it says here, Prabhupada said this, therefore this is right. And then what you are saying, Sadhu, or what you are saying, Guru, that is wrong. Because actually, they're united. But sometimes we see that they're separate. But we have to go very deep into the matter and try to get the Siddhanta by through this system of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. We have to find the areas where they're in agreement, not the areas where they appear to be different. And of course, there are some differences, but overall, you know, we're acting under the guidance of Krishna and his representatives. as gurus and sadhus are in line with what he is saying, and they're in line with what Prabhupada is saying. So we have to penetrate very deeply, and we have to be very careful about what we think Chaitra Guru is saying to us, or what even Chaitra Guru is saying to us, because the Chaitra Guru, as the Paramatma, is giving the thief intelligence how to steal, just like he's giving the householder the intelligence how to catch the thief. So it's not that whatever we're getting is the right thing, is the spiritual thing, because Krishna's giving us a lot of independence. So we also have to rely upon the Shastra and the various other gurus to get the complete picture. Because if we rely too much on what we think, then we can find something in Prabhupada's books to back about just about anything up, you know, and that happens. So we have to be careful and be intellectually honest and not lazy, and be very alert to the whole picture, you know, and not just sort of act according to what we think is right and find something to back it up. We have to see the whole thing and try to understand the larger picture. Not be too selective. Yes?
Okay. Maharaj, on the topic of the Shikshi Guru, we look at all devotees as our Shikshi Guru. Really, we can get instruction from anyone. But it's been a bit of a fashion for devotees to ask a particular guru, will you be my Shikshi Guru? Mm.
It's possible. It's not. It's not forbidden to do this. To have a particular faith in a particular. A stronger faith in one individual as a Shiksha Guru, but to become absolute and certified and official is. One has to be very careful, and I think it's, I'll read a little bit further in this resolution, that such a thing should be done in consultation and with approval of the Diksha Guru, not just sort of, you know, taking shelter of devotee X, even though I'm initiated by devotee Y. One has to be very careful, because there's a very important interaction that takes place. It's natural that, just like we only will have maybe a few close friends, that we'll get more inspiration from one or maybe a few individuals than we welcome everyone as a group. It's only natural that we want to feel the same kind of inspiration from each and every person. It's equally the same. It's natural. But one has to be very careful, I think, in becoming, in this time and place and age, of thinking that one person has kind of an exclusive slant on what is true and right. We try to take the collective knowledge and get the Siddhanta, just like Prabhupada is quoting Sri Araswami, he's quoting Vishwanath Chakravarti, he's quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he's quoting Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and many, many, many others. So even Prabhupada himself, although he had Diksha from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was, when he wrote his books, he was very profusely quoting from other gurus. And sometimes he would even, you know, find places where they weren't in perfect alignment, but he would say that he would quote both, and we would have to kind of use our intelligence to determine what is the right course. Just like Arjuna had to decide what to do about Aswatthama, he was getting equivocal instructions. Krishna even changed his mind. So it's possible, but when we say Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, the very meaning of Sadhu is, in my understanding anyway, it's a plural meaning. It doesn't mean just a particular Sadhu, but it means the whole preceptorial line. And actually, when we're getting transcendental knowledge, we are connecting to the whole preceptorial line, the whole disciplic succession. Of course, some of those are not physically with us, but we can also see the body of Vaishnavas. Like, you know, we'll get various opportunities for association with different devotees, and some will take the import of what they say to be more important than others. So that's just a reflection. It's not an absolute answer. That's some reflections on this. Anything? I have one more. Shashi.
I have still this question, Marshal. So you were mentioning of Guru Sadhan Shastra, and we are saying that one should take the permission of the Diksha Guru to take shelter of other Diksha Gurus. Now, sometimes if it's, there could be deviations the Diksha Guru may choose to take a total proprietorship on his disciple or whatever, which is probably a deviation in that case, just to give it as an example. And how does one, should one, the first part of the question, should one engage in any discrimination? To find out if it is a deviation. And if one should engage in discrimination, how should one go about that? And what's the Vaishnava etiquette to go about using discrimination?
I think maybe the best thing is to kind of read about that, because the devotees have sat together and they've talked about this. And the concept of very singular proprietorship is mentioned in there as a kind of a deviation. It's not recommended. But maybe I'll read that and then we can discuss it more in my next class. It's a very good point. So I think we'll end here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Namo Vishnu Padaya.